Welcome in everybody to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built in. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. Helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends where you found it, whether it was Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere where you find fine podcast content. You can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, the Longhorn Republic, or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. My name is Gerald Goodridge. I'm your host this week, like I am every week, and I'm joined by a man who has one of the best shirts I've ever seen, Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
You know, you got to get a matching dinosaur polo when your nephew wants a dinosaur shirt. So, yeah, we're matching, and I'm styling, and I would you know, surmise profiling as well, almost as much as the University of Texas baseball team in their just very subtle jabs at this rebuilding team and what they can accomplish. Luxuriating in it, I will say.
I'm going to be honest with you. If we were recording in person, I would steal that shirt. Even though it wouldn't fit me, I would steal it from you. Or maybe I'd just buy one myself and get to hang out with you and your very, very cool nephew. At least he seems cool. I don't know.
He's a good dude. He just had his pre-K graduation this past week. It was one of the more adorable things ever. We got him, you know, a dinosaur balloon and a cookie cake. Obviously, the icing on the cookie cake immediately went on his shirt. And his mom, you know, not ready to chastise him, just said, "Lucas." And before she could say anything, he said, "I know, I know, I know." And the way he said it, like a 48-year-old who'd just been through some things, absolutely killed me. He's my favorite comedian.
I love it. I love it. We're not here to talk about graduations. We're here to talk about teams moving on, though. Texas went down to Miami and came out 3-0 with the regional still deciding who's going to host the Super. The Aggies just hit a home run to go up 1-0 at the top of the second, but much like every college game, gotta wait till the relievers come in to see how this one's going to shake out. Down the 40, track starting a national championship run this week, got some award finalists, not a big show tonight, BOL, some big news, guys coming back to campus, new guys coming to campus, and the guy who was on campus when we were gets some big news. We'll obviously close the show out with some Godzillatron and some Bang the Drum. So Texas went down to the city where the heat is on and didn't really feel much heat, actually. Came away with a 3-0 record in the Miami, the Coral Gables Regional, and gonna see who, if they host again, A&M and Stanford. If Stanford wins this one, well, then they'll go to Palo Alto. If A&M wins this one, well, we'll find out in a couple of days who's gonna host. But Louisiana gave us a little bit of a scare, 4-2 on Friday. Pretty easy. The Saturday game is probably the story of the weekend and the pitching performance in that one. 4-1 on Saturday off of LeBaron Johnson, just absolutely giving us his best performance that since he's been on the 40 acres. And then a 10-6 come from behind, but early come from behind victory in that one. Just absolutely incredible performance. Kyle, as you reflect on the regional, like, what sticks out to you the most? There's an easy answer.
Pitching, Gerald, pitching. Look, all year we talked about good starters, but what happens in the bullpen? I think Texas used 5 pitchers this weekend, 3 starters and 2 relievers. Those were the guys that had to get it done, and they got it done. It's crazy. LeBaron Johnson was the MVP of the regional. He deserved it. But Lucas Gordon, no slouch himself, right? 7 innings, 8 strikeouts, 0 walks, 1 run on 5 hits. In that first game, he was phenomenal, and they, you know, went to the guys. Like, you knew what Lucas Gordon was. You've seen the renaissance the past couple weeks, months from LeBaron Johnson. But another guy, Zane Morehouse, he got the save, multi-inning save in the first one and closed out the third one, is a guy who's had some bumps, had some ups, had some downs, and credit to Coach Woody Williams, the pitching coach, and to Coach Pierce for, you know, there was multiple times this year when it's like, Morehouse, you know, he's gotten rocked, but we went back to him. There's a very clear formula, and I'm not saying Coach Pierce doesn't care about the regular season, but Coach Pierce cares about the playoffs, and there's, I think, a little bit of everything that's done is to build in, I shouldn't say playoffs, to the postseason. Everything is done during the season to lead up to the season, right? And if it clicks the way that it did in this regional where your starters are firing like that, your bats do what they did, you know, 9 runs in one of the innings this weekend, that's a pretty good inning. You're going to have a really tough team to beat with as much talent as exists on this team. And so seeing Zane Morehouse, who might just have the best stuff on the team if he's on and he's got control of it, you know, come out of relief. And Charlie Hurley, when Tanner Witt just didn't have it, it got yanked early, is we thought could always be a possibility. Charlie Hurley came in and pitched, you know, solid in some extended relief, right? So whoever was out there, you have a couple guys long-term with the program in Morehouse, LeBaron Johnson, Tanner Witt, and Lucas Gordon, in addition to, a guy like Hurley who came in the transfer portal. They all were bought in 100%, and they all were playing big-time Texas baseball, right? That Texas on your chest means something different in the month of June.
Again, you and I mentioned it in the preview. When this team, it's a relatively young, relatively inexperienced team. We talked about it in the preview. If they can live up to the ceiling, they're going to be a formidable team. And LeBaron Johnson, who, I'll just go and say it, you and I, behind closed doors a year ago, called him a walking home run. Like, the guy was just, it was almost guaranteed. And now he's completely turned it around, and he's putting in master classes. And I think I was a little anxious yesterday, let me say, when Tanner Witt kind of came in and struggled with his control, because Tanner Witt, we've seen what he can be when he's good, and we saw his first start when he didn't really have his stuff yet, and things went sideways for Texas really fast. And so the ability for the bullpen, you and I have ragged on the bullpen and the relievers all year because they have been inconsistent, but for the starters to really get Texas where they need to, and the relievers for the most part being able to carry like that, if Texas gets that kind of performance this next week against whoever it is, A&M or Stanford, I don't see a situation where they don't end up in Omaha. Now, A&M and Stanford are both really, really talented teams, but having watched that series, like, I would put the Longhorns up with those guys. We saw what the bats can do on Sunday, where Texas, if you hang them, Texas is going to bang them, right? 9 runs in one inning. It was absolutely incredible. Tanner Witt gave up three in the first, and then Texas came back like 2 innings later and put up 9 just to retake the lead and kind of cruise from there, right? And it wasn't just your typical Porter Brown. It wasn't your typical Dylan Campbell. Dylan Campbell did have something in there, but Garrett Gamet hit a two-run double. Jared Thomas hit a 2-run double. Peyton Powell. Jalen Flores, a guy who had a little bit of a coming out party against West Virginia, absolutely crushed one by 6 at the time and ended up being the difference in the game. Those 4 runs ended up being the game decider. And so Texas showed that it's got multiple guys that are able to step up in the spot. And I'm really, if this is the heat that they're at, right? If this is the continuation of West Virginia, I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah, and look, will they get literally perfect outings from Lucas Gordon and LeBaron Johnson in their next outings? I don't know. That'd be wonderful if they do. Can they recover if there's a little bit of a wobble in either of those? We shall see, but I feel a lot better seeing long relief from Hurley, seeing, you know, not just one inning closes, but Morehouse coming in late game and kind of being, because he's been a starter in his past, he has the stuff and the stamina. He's perfectly fine as a 3-inning closer, and that's great to have at this time of the season. A guy with All-American caliber stuff, he's just not fully put it together, was able to put it together and you know, striking out the side to send them to the super, you know, was great. I mean, that you saw 3 masterclass performances, right? You saw Gordon, you saw Johnson, and I think you have to really put Morehouse there. I think he got a little bit snubbed from the all-regional team. He faced 18 batters, struck out 9 of them. He gave up 3 hits, had 1 save, 1, you know, non-save because it was a 4-run lead, but should have really been 2 saves. 18 batters, struck out half of them, right? Like, that's telling you something. When Miami's a good hitting team, you know, when they just can't get the bat on the ball, that's telling you that his stuff is electric. Even Tanner Witt, right? Like, that first inning, he came out and looked good. You know, I'm not writing him off. He hit 2 batters, which is uncharacteristic, but we saw him hit a couple batters. Like, it's, if that breaking ball is, his arm's still, you know, not exactly where he wants it, and that breaking ball isn't snapping, and it's supposed to break down and in, and it hangs a little on somebody's elbow, you know, that that's tough, and you just don't have it. But, you know, I'm still not writing him off. But I do wonder, you know, Dylan Campbell obviously will get a hit every game. He extended his streak to 38. The defense in this one, Gerald, I'll say, you know, they started the Louisiana game with errors in, I think, the first two innings, at least. And then they ended the game completely erasing that narrative with a Dylan Campbell, you know, full Superman catch showing he can do it all, and the Eric Kennedy robbing a home run center field up over the wall. So, you know, they did it in all the phases in this one, right? You had a grand slam, you had, you know, clutch hitting, team hitting with loading the bases up and driving them home. You had guys working walks. You had, you know, good defense around. And you had elite pitching, right? That's how you win. That's how you sweep. I really like how they match up with either of the two teams who will be up for them next, and especially if they, you know, they do happen to get the Supers in Austin. I really like, you know, Texas playing there, but, you know, got to keep it going. You saw some guys who, you know, I already talked about Morehouse, but you saw Mitchell Daly get a home run in a key moment. Jack O'Dowd, you know, you already talked about Flores with the grand slam. If you're getting to the point, and in that Sunday game, every player, every starter hitter, I guess, on the Texas roster scored a run. If you're getting that type of team production, not just relying on the big, you know, the big names, the big bats to carry you home, then I really like where this team is, where they can be dangerous 1-9. And, you know, I really like their ability. I don't even think Porter Brown has been at his best, and he's probably been our second best hitter throughout this year. So, you know, there's still, I think, some meat on the bone for him to step up and have a Porter Brown game here in this postseason. So the all-regional team, I think rightfully so, honored LeBaron Johnson at pitcher. Rafe Schlesinger, I just want to talk about it, Gerald, real quick. The Miami pitcher who came in and pitched seven innings of relief, set innings career high with 7, strikeouts career high with 9. He's kind of a sidearm lefty. He was getting some good calls for sure, but I mean, he was just so hard to hit
the way
he was coming across. It was the best performance of his career by exponents, and it seems like people always do that against Texas, but that's what pushed LeBaron Johnson and made him his performance even the better, right? It was basically after the fourth inning, just a pitcher's duel. And so those were the two pitchers of the tournament. Lucas Gordon and Zane Morehouse could both be a little bit chuffed to not make that, but, you know, you can't really argue with it. You know, I thought Texas was well represented on that team, and rightfully so.
First of all, good use of chuffed, right? But yeah, it was weird watching a 4-1 pitcher's duel, right? Like, it was very weird watching, because that's what it turned into. And that's the thing with this Texas lineup. I really, like, it's one of the things I really appreciate about the Texas lineup, honestly, is that they're going to jump on your guy early, chase him, and then they may not score for the remaining 6 innings of the game. But jumping on somebody for 9 early will get the job done any day of the week. So we talked about momentum. We talked about them getting hot. It feels like the momentum is starting to pick up again. And so regardless of who they're going to play, I feel solidly about Texas. Now, I feel even better if they're playing in Austin, because they play just absolutely lights out against that crowd. And that's a possibility. Right now, A&M and Stanford are tied in the second. And so that will determine if Stanford wins, Texas goes to Palo Alto. If A&M wins, then it's kind of a bidding contest between the two.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my preference is Austin over College Station, but that's neither here nor there.
Gerald, we know that Stanford won to force this, right? They won Sunday 13-5. tell people at home, if they don't follow the full landscape of college athletics as much as you and I, what are the implications of Stanford winning and getting through this round?
Yeah, so essentially, if you're not keeping up with it, and OU did us a favor early today, but the Director's Cup is like tighter than it's been in years past, and part of that's because of the rowing national championship we talked about a couple weeks ago. But essentially, Texas has to finish like a round and a half or 2 rounds better than Stanford in the NCAA baseball tournament in order to win the Director's Cup. So we're not cheering for A&M, we're cheering against Stanford, is the way I reconcile that deep down in my heart. But Texas needs Stanford to lose this one if they want to keep their Director's Cup hopes alive for the three-peat.
Good friend of the podcast and actual listener, Rob Silheimer texted it today. This was earlier before the softball game had started. If Texas lost Director's Cup, but Stanford dethrones OU softball, would you take it? Now, we know that OU softball had a ninth inning, two-out double to beat Stanford 4-2. And I'm curious, Gerald, let's say you can control the world starting, you know, today, but only in sporting events that involve Stanford, which is a weird superpower. But
it's a very weird caveat.
Would you take it? Would you take losing the Director's Cup to have OU softball knocked out?
No, not at all. There are two things that I really like that are influencing my opinion here. One, I'm a big believer in that, like, competitive balance is overrated, and if there's one team that's really, really good, like, I like them watching them being excellent. Again, it sucks that it's OU. It sucks that Texas is going to play in a conference with them forever, but, like, I feel like this is how, like, if you're going to be better, just be, like, leaps and bounds better than everyone. Just see how finally you can tune the thing and get it to the point where, like, Alabama was several years ago. And I think the other thing is, like, since Texas is the last team to beat OU, so, like, I kind of like that, like, Texas is kind of the fly in the ointment for them, because they would have an astronomical, like, pushing triple-digit streak if Texas had won one random Sunday game last year.
Yeah, I would like Texas to be the one that somehow dethrones them. That, you know, is easier said than done. I'll say what I responded to Rob was that I would take the Faustian proposition if only it meant it was a double or nothing. They beat A&M in baseball, so we know they're going to – the Director's Cup is off the table, most likely – then they also beat OU in softball. So they get both. So it's already, yeah, we've lost it. Yeah. So it's a double or nothing. If they get both, but if they get one or the other, then no, I'm out on that. We will be rooting against Stanford baseball as we are right now as we record this. Just rounding it out, Gerald, I think, I don't know if I finished it off. We said LeBaron Johnson, but Jared Thomas on first base, Dylan Campbell outfield, Garrett Gamet at catcher, DH Jalen Flores, all also made the all-regional team. The one trivia piece that I wanted to close out this with, Gerald, two teams have swept their past three baseball regionals. Can you name them?
University of Texas.
That is correct.
And who swept this weekend? Ah, man. I'm drawing a blank. Tennessee?
It is Tennessee. Just like the trivia last week that was about Tennessee is turning into a, just if you're called UT and you're orange these days, it's honestly pretty good. They're not quite as good as us. They've never had a Director's Cup finish anywhere near where we have, but nonetheless, it is the other UT. So UT would have been a sufficient answer.
I love it. I absolutely love it. Just a quick reset. So it was kind of a bloodbath for big seeds that were bounced. Arkansas, number 3. Clemson, number 4. Vandy, number 6. Coastal, number 10. Oklahoma State with a 2 in barbecue at number 11. Number 13, Auburn. And number 8, Stanford. Again, currently tied 1-1 with A&M potentially going out as well. We'll obviously be back next week covering whatever happens in this regional. But fingers crossed, Stanford loses and Texas hosts the Supers. Now's the part of the show where we whip around the rest of campus quickly and we down the 40 track. We talked about it last week, sending 16 for the women and 8 for the men. That starts this Wednesday. Highlighting that, obviously, there's a trio of the Bowerman finalists for the ladies. 30% of the Bowerman finalists wear burnt orange. Rasadat Adeleke, Alfred, and Akalia Smith was just added this week. So Texas, I feel like, could they get up to 5 or 6 of the Bowerman finalists depending on this weekend?
I feel like they might, there is maybe a fourth who could get there, but let's just say, you know, what's more likely and even more impressive is if the list cuts to 5 and they still have 3, right? I think that's just absurd and shows why they're the number one team.
Texas or the field at this
point
for the Bowerman, which is absolutely ridiculous. On the tennis side, 3 from the men's team earned ITA All-American honors. Elliot Spezieri and Micah Braswell received them in singles, and then the duo of Spezieri and Cleve Harper won in doubles.
Yeah, Bruce Burke in 5 years now has 17 All-American selections, which is pretty incredible, right? When you think about how he started as head coach, yeah, right? Like it's
post varsity.
Correct. So just incredible credit to him. stepping in and being, you know, instantly one of the best coaches in the nation. And obviously credit to the players who earned those honors. Michael Braswell, I love that he earned All-American honors. We know that, you know, if he would have been healthy all season, his ranking would have been even higher. But he proved it in the postseason that he's capable. And those people you named, all three of them, Gerald, are juniors. So they were the number one team this year, finished number three at the end of the in the final poll, didn't win the national championship. There's going to be some hungry kids coming back as seniors next year who really want to want to avenge that and have an even better finish. So, like where that program is sitting.
Don't hate the hungry seniors. On the Ladies Country Club side, four ladies from the number three women's golf team were named to the All Big 12 team.
Senior Sophie Guo, junior Bentley Cotton, and then two freshmen, Angela Hiao and Cindy Sue, all four making the All Big 12 team. Love to see the freshmen here again. There's two other freshmen who have had some great finishes throughout the season. So though they'll lose Guo, I think they have a pretty robust core coming back for a team that also finished number three in the final poll this season. We just saw, by the way, Stanford super all everything. I've jokingly called her Tigress, the female Tiger Woods. Rose Zhang has, you know, UT put up historic numbers to be second. And we said, man, that Stanford team is so crazy good. And a lot of it is because Rose Zhao is probably the greatest female college golfer of all time. And we saw that by her immediately going out like a week later and winning in her debut LPGA. She's just already...
13 days, yeah. Kyle. 13 days.
That's stupid. That's like, yeah. That's like... I don't even have another really sports equivalent for someone doing that so quickly in their professional career at any point. So, you know, now that she's gone, who knows? Maybe the Texas team can rally with their young core. And they were 4 out of 10 on the All-Big 12 team. So let's see if they can build on that next season.
It's like winning the national championship and then just going and, you know, playing a couple of downs in the Super Bowl. No big deal.
All right, Gerald, now let's take a look at the world through some burnt orange lenses. One that came just after we recorded last week, so we'll start it off here with this one. It's been out for a couple days. Hopefully you've heard this. If you have not, then boy, do we have some good news for you. Dylan Mitchell, sophomore, kind of surprisingly announced he's returning.
Renounced to the NBA.
That's correct. Renounced and announced. It was a buzzer beater. 11:59 and 59 seconds, I think, before the midnight 6-1 deadline. When you had to announce earlier that day, I thought there was a little bit of hope, but when it just didn't come in, I was like, okay, I guess he's you know going to test the draft waters. But yeah, I mean, this is a kid who started every game for us last year. Maybe didn't really have any plays ran for him, so his numbers aren't gaudy off the page. His athleticism is, and I think that's what teams were looking at and projecting. We did also see a lot of video and hear a lot of folks talking about how good his game looked as a potential wing at the NBA level. His three-point shooting, his ball handling all looked much better than what we saw. So hopefully whatever work he did in prep for the NBA draft translates next year as he comes back and looks to be one of the main contributors on the team next season.
Yeah, Tyrese Hunter tweeted a thing like earlier in that day, and I was like, I wonder if this is about Dylan Mitchell. And then like 10:59 Central Time, the announcement came in, which is, you know, I was trying to go to sleep, and then I saw that, and I was up for another like 30-ish minutes or so, which was annoying. But, I mean, a potential starting five of Asmus Hunter, Mitchell, Disu, and then Caden Shedrick. I think Texas probably still needs to look at guards mm-hmm. at some point. I feel like there's probably a need to add maybe one more body there. But, like, that's a pretty solid starting five. Again, I'd love to see another rotation guy for the backcourt.
Yeah, I think Asmus Hunter and Chandler Weaver are all really good guards who can all put up points, but I wouldn't hate having a fourth guard just to add in the rotation. And we know Brock Perryman or Gavin Perryman can shoot it. I just don't know if I want to rely on him as my, you know, second guard off the bench. Kind of a, you know, your guards handle the ball and you know, if you have an injury anywhere in there, if you have someone who's just really off, gets in foul trouble, you know, it in a weird way, Texas is more set in the front court than the back court, which has not been the MO for this team of recent vintage. So nonetheless, not to distract, I'm excited that Dylan Mitchell did come back and did basically fill the gaps in the front court. Now, if they get another big as well, cool. Keep at it. Keep adding
not
talent.
Mad about it.
But I do think that if they don't, this team is relatively set, but with starters and rotation players to come in there. Remember, Brock Cunningham still on the team. Another player who will be joining probably well after Dylan Mitchell has actually left the 40 acres.
at least a couple of years.
2025 four-star quarterback, Woof. KJ Lacy. That's right. 2025 kids are. He's the first commit in that class. He picked Texas over Alabama, Auburn, Tennessee, etc. Top 50 recruit. I believe he's the number five QB in this class. He's an Alabama kid. I think Alabama fans were pretty sure with the you know, being the hometown kid and what he had done and the fact that one of the guys he throws to is already an Alabama lock. I think this shocked a lot of Bama fans. They thought he was theirs for the taking. It's a long recruitment. Texas is now going to have to play defense. 2025 is a ways off, so but a big one nonetheless.
I mean, I'd rather play defense on a kid like him than have to flip him from Bama, which is damn near impossible. But like, this just shows, I think, what people believe about AJ Milwee and Steve Sarkisian as a developer of quarterbacks. He told our new friends over at 247 Sports about his, you know, what he believes about Sark and AJ Milwee as developers of quarterbacks. But like, this kid stepped into 6A football in Alabama and just through 3,100 yards and a 40-5 touchdown interception ratio. Oh, and also won the state championship as a sophomore. Granted, he also has a good friend and number three player in the country to throw to as a quarterback in Ryan Williams, who is committed to Alabama, but the cracks may be showing. It's fine. It just shows, I think, what Texas is going to do and continue to do. If Texas is able to show it on the field this year, I think this is going to be the pattern for Sark moving forward, where they get an elite kid, and then they take a Trey Owens, who, like, people are sleeping on my boy Trey, but Trey can sling the rock. Like, he's not Arch. He might not be KJ Lacy, but, like, Trey Owens isn't just going to come in and hold the clipboard. He might end up just doing that, but he's going to compete and he's going to push, because I think, you know, the presumption is that whoever takes over next, whether it's Arch or whether it's Malik, they'll be gone in a couple years. And so you have Owens and Lacy competing for the starting spot for that 2025 season. So I'm curious to see how that turns out, because this kid can sling it, man. This, if you watch the tape, the arm angles on KJ Lacy, very, very impressive.
Yeah, there's a reason that he's beyond just being in the state of Alabama. There's a reason he's getting Bryce Young comparisons. It's, you know, he's got a lot of talent. He does a lot of things well. Again, it helps to throw to, you know, an elite wide receiver. But hey, why not bring them both? I think Sark is always going to have a quarterback pipeline. I just think players are going to want to play for him. He's, you know, knows in today's day and age, you might lose some, but you got to keep filling the pipeline so that, you know, it's next man up. And he's proven his system. If guys stick around, learn it, and only get 1 year, you can still get drafted in the NFL in the first round. You know, that is the Sarkisian offense that I'm hoping we will really see next season, that will warrant some of this. So, opposite side of the football, a little Texas defense pre-Sark era, but also made it through to the Sark era. Yeah, former Longhorn defensive back Michael Huff is part of the ballot for potential or for inclusion in the 2024 College Football Hall of Fame class. I think I saw there was like 70 D1 players on there. I don't know exactly how many they take, but nonetheless, I think he deserves to at least be in the conversation. I would make the argument he deserves to be in the hall, but I've always said you can't have a 4th and 5 if you don't first have a Huff on 4th and 2. In that national championship, made a play that's, you know, overshadowed by Vince Young's play, but still of almost or maybe literally equal importance.
I mean, I thought that's where you were going with the Sark thing when they did a one of the many documentaries about that national championship game. Sark was on record as calling that stop probably the play of the game, not the VY touchdown, but that play right there, because that's what cinched the game. If USC gets the first down there, that game is over, and they run out the clock, and it's all she wrote. Like you said, you don't get Vince Young for all the dreams, all the hopes, if you don't have Michael Huff absolutely stuffing that hole. And it's we're at that point where I'm having to confront my own mortality, Kyle, because guys that we were on campus watching are now getting into halls of fame. And that is a thing that I wasn't necessarily ready to deal with this Monday. But you know what? We are here.
That's right. He's deservedly so. The four-year starter, two-time All-American, Thorpe Award winner, unanimous. First-team All-American. You know, I think he holds the Texas record for a few things, including interception, a couple different interception return records. He had two different seasons where he had two of them, which is a record. He has four total, which is a career record. Five defensive TDs is a record. That's a man who knows how to contribute beyond just tackles. And I think he's like third all time in pass breakups as well. He did the things, but he also did the extra things. Blocked three kicks. Just all around great player. Drafted seventh. Had a nice little NFL career. Came back to Texas. Great ambassador for the program. Great influence on kind of the next crop of kids. He's a Hall of Fame human.
Hates sleeves
with a passion. I can only imagine he gets inducted as a cutoff tuxedo when he gets in sleeveless.
Burnt orange Jordans and a sleeveless tux.
Someone with almost as much swag as Huff, former Texas Longhorn softball standout Mary Iacopo, set to participate in the upcoming U.S. Women's Fast Pitch Camp, which basically will, you know, fill the national team for the upcoming 2023 slate of tournaments. I believe she represented at the U17 level, and then obviously came to UT and balled out for multiple years. Was an All-American, deservedly so. I'll be rooting, as I always do, for Queen Mary.
This is the one event that can bring Texas and OU fans together, is the U.S. national team for softball, because it feels like there's usually at least a couple from each that are on that squad. So hopefully she can wear the stars and stripes here in a few years.
Gerald, let's start taking this thing home. Bit of Godzilla-tron. What have you been watching on your giant screen?
You'll find out more about this in a little bit, but it has, again, the trend of not a big streaming week for my wife and I. But we did pause in all of the craziness of the last few weeks and watched the Ted Lasso finale. And much like the last Bill Lawrence show that I got really into, Scrubs, I wept for like seven solid minutes at the end of that episode. Like, Kyle, are you current? Have you finished the season of Lasso?
We were one behind, so we've watched the one to get to the finale. I haven't seen it.
Okay, so I won't spoil it, but as soon as I heard the song, like the song that they use, because that's one thing with Bill Lawrence shows, like the music is perfect, and it's a very recognizable song. The first two like guitar strums, I'm like, oh, yep, we're gonna start crying, and immediately, like 90 seconds in, I'm like, yeah, we're done for. And I'm a crier, like I've admitted this, and you'll probably hear me cry in about 2-ish minutes, but I didn't realize, like I just thought that was normal emotion. And then I look over at my wife, who's not a crier. She's not a media crier. She's not like a real life crier, even. That's just how she's very stoic. And she is like, we are both just ugly crying, holding hands and watching this finale. So just absolutely perfect. Like the last season had some ups and downs. There was some character development that happened off screen that I wish they had made time for. They committed to three seasons. They got to three seasons. And I think in spite of the things I would have changed about the season, the way they landed the plane was perfect.
I love that. I love finale that way. I am going to talk a little bit about a show that I'm also penultimate. I am one from the finale. Ted Lasso is a watch with my wife show. So we watched the one we couldn't get to the second one in time. The other show is a me show. She hasn't been watching with me. So I think I got four episodes, basically on my journey to the finish line. I think there's 13 in the sixth season of Better Call Saul, and I am now up to 12. And speaking of ugly crying, there's a performance. I think it's called Waterworks. In fact, there's an emotional catharsis scene in the penultimate episode of Better Call Saul that's as good of cry acting as I've ever seen, probably in stage or screen, from a character, Kim Wexler. And I don't think that gives anything too much away, if somehow you're watching and not up to speed. It did come out. I think it's been on Netflix now for the sixth season for 2 weeks, something like that. So people probably, like me, were waiting and now are catching up. So I won't spoil anything. And I can't spoil because I am still one away. But I will say the last kind of the run as they not to, you know, again, give anything away with the format as they close out the show in real time and then they kind of go to the flash forward. There's really three shows. There's a prequel show, a show that is in the same timeline as Breaking Bad, and then a kind of future. And they balance all really, really well, but they pretty much wrap up the past and current timeline and go into the future timeline now, I believe, for the last couple episodes. And it's just really incredibly well done. A show that, like, takes its time. It luxuriates. It's some of the best cinematography I've ever seen. Like, it's like some indie foreign filmmaker, you know. It's that level of just like, oh man, this is an art piece. Is the story going to be as good as? No, it is. It's also as good, with some really, Kim Wexler being one of them, really just incredibly sharply drawn, fleshed out characters, including the Better Call Saul, who was a caricature, who was kind of created for the Breaking Bad show, and then when they did a spinoff, just the amount of depth they were able to mine out of that character is pretty fantastic and phenomenal. And Bob Odenkirk, as many know, suffered a heart attack between, they split the sixth season first half and second half. I think the first episode they were shooting back. So they took a month, 6 weeks, something like that off. And I was listening to an interview where he talked about where that actually happened. And you would never know it. Everything they filmed the last like four episodes, like he's just so in it and he's so powerful and he's so great that you wouldn't know that that had just happened to him. I'm not saying it, you know, it changed his performance, but it's like, you, I don't know. It just, I think it's, we're a little bit past peak TV. There's still some really, really good stuff on, but you know, the era of anti-heroes and golden age of television and the way people just, you know, worshiped the shows of 10 to 15 years ago, it really prestige TV. I feel like this holds up with any of them, right? You could put it against Mad Men, you could put it against Breaking Bad, you could, you know, put it against The Wire or The Sopranos. Like it holds up with any of those. And I haven't seen the finale, but I have a feeling it's not going to just lose it and fumble the ball at the 1 yard line here. Whatever they choose to do, I'm pretty excited and very much looking forward to. Hate to see it end. Like I've kind of been saving. Like I don't. Once I watch it, it's over. And I feel the same about Ted Lasso. And I talked last week about two other shows. So there's a lot of openings here for some new material. But Better Call Saul continues to just be...
Justified. Coming back next month.
Ooh, baby.
Just in time. That brings us to the part of the show where we honor one of the best traditions in all of college athletics, Big Bertha. And we bang the drum, brought to you by Joe Ruiz. So, Kyle, what are you banging the drum on this week?
Gerald, you I think hinted at it with the A&M athletic director Ross Bjorn. No, it's Bjork. Being insistent that you know, Aggies get to determine things, which is just so sadly they haven't been able to do so up to this point. But the big talk was, you know, when Texas and Oklahoma come in 2024, will it be an 8-game or a 9-game? Conference schedule. Del Conte came out in favor of the 9-game schedule, and of course one of those, you know, being a permanent OU game and another hopefully being a permanent A&M game played at, you know, place of your choosing for the first game. It just came out earlier this week that in fact for the 2024 season, not forever, including Texas and Oklahoma, it will be a 8-game conference season, which will mean 4 non-conference games, which will mean Texas will be scrambling to fill a 4th non-conference game for that season. Texas has a history of not playing FCS teams. In fact, they've only played one ever, and it was Sam Houston State, and it was because a game got canceled and it was a last-minute scramble to play, you know, to find a replacement team. So Gerald and I have both long been strong advocates that, you know, Texas should keep the money in state, and there are great kind of third tier programs in the state. And so I hope they choose to play one of those types of teams for this extra slot. I hope that we do go back to a 9-game conference, however, in 2025. Schedules will come out very soon, I think June 14th, so 10 days or less, eight days when you're listening to this, you will find out the SEC teams that Texas will be playing in its 8-game schedule. We know 3 of their 4 non-conference, but it's all there, all for the taking. So keep your eyes out for that.
I think part of the issue, like there's two lines of thought. There's one where people are like, the SEC is a bunch of cowards for wanting to keep that soft 4th non-conference game in there, which I'm more of like, it's harder to get out of a contract in 1 year than it is 2. And so most of these SEC schools have 4 non-conference games already scheduled out, and so it's giving them an extra year to get out of some of those. It's a lot easier for Texas and OU to find one game than it is for 14 SEC teams to drop a school and not decimate their budget. But it is what it is. It's fine. I think Texas is going to play A&M. Texas is going to play OU. So we're really just waiting for six games, and I'm completely fine with that. I'm banging the drum this year on two quick things. One, if you are keeping up with these things, Indiana State won the right to host a super regional against TCU. TCU knocked off one of those top seeds in Arkansas that we talked about earlier. Indiana State was going to be the regional host. But because of the some prior commitments, specifically the Indiana State Special Olympics already being scheduled for the same weekend and requiring significant staff and facility crossover, they decided to forego this kind of like once in a decade opportunity for them to host a super regional, and we'll let it go to TCU, which is cool in and of itself. And then when you find out that TCU fans, as a response, have organized a mass donation campaign to the Indiana Special Olympics, like, that's super cool. So I'm banging the drum this week on sports, bringing people together and doing cool things. We talk a lot of crap about a lot of people for fun, but when sports fans get together, they can do some really cool stuff. I have retweeted that link for the donation, so if you've got some money that you'd like to chip in, let's just overwhelm the Indiana Special Olympics with as much money as we feasibly can. I'm also banging the drum this week on something a little more personal. You've heard me talking for the last several weeks about my wife and I being in the middle of renovations and working on the house and stuff, blah, 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 blah. We are actually in the middle of moving. I will be moving later this week. Back moving from, I spent the last 15 years of my life living in Oklahoma, and we will be moving back to the Lone Star State. And I wouldn't normally mention that, like, personal stuff on the podcast, save for there is a lot of cool stuff that has happened while I lived in this house. All three of my kids came home from the hospital to this house. And when my first child was 6 months old, I responded to a post and DM'd one Cody Daniel about an opening that they were trying to fill at Burnt Orange Nation for somebody to write content. And well, that turned into a few months later, Kyle and I launching this podcast. And now 6 football seasons later, I am recording the final podcast from the house in which it all started. So many of the significant life events for me happened while I lived in this house. And so I just want to take a moment and pause and just say thank you all for going on this journey with us. It's been a long time. We've been through being independent. We've been through having offshore betting as a sponsor. We've been through signing on with Vox. We've gone through being axed by Vox. We've been on, now we're looking at going back. We're going to go back to 2 podcasts a week starting next week as we ramp up to football season. But all that to say, I just want to pause and say thank you all for going on this journey with me. I'm an emotional guy, and so I'm going to wrap this up before I start crying, but I will never forget the impact that you all have had on my life. I'll never forget the impact that this house has made in my life. And so as one chapter closes, the chapter of the Longhorn Republic will still remain open. I'll be recording coming to you. Next week I'll be on a work trip and recording, but in 2 weeks I'll be coming to you from the ancestral Goodrich home as we get everything sorted out in Texas.
It is. It will be great to have both recordings done in the state of Texas, where we rightfully belong, where the germination of this podcast originally started, with another friend who did Central Texas sports radio at the University of Texas, and Gerald and I did sports TV and media at the University of Texas, and then Gerald moved to Oklahoma and we missed each other and said, what if we just did a podcast? We had a forever hypothetical podcast with our good friend Raymond.
It was a radio show for
years. It was a radio show when podcasts were still, you know, before Scandal or a Serial came and relaunched the medium. it was going to be a radio show with Little in the Middle and my Quarter Ton of Justice. We haven't had Raymond on this show, I don't believe. We've done other podcasts together, but It has been a joy, Gerald, and you know, it started as a way because I missed talking to you all the time and the crazy hijinks we would just sit around and talk about, and we got to channel those through the lens of UT sports, which was awesome. Just because you're going to be back in the home state doesn't mean I don't want to talk to you every week. So I'm excited we're still doing this, but even more excited we'll both be in the great Lone Star State.
And we can continue or reignite our December 26th IHOP brunches. But that's all we've got for you this week. Kyle, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
You can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Carbon. You can also follow the Texas Pregamer at Texas Pregamer.
You can follow me on Twitter. I am at GH Goodrich. Follow the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. Facebook and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic. Or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. Like I already said, we will be back next week starting our season previews. We've already got, we're going to do it a little bit differently this year, but be excited for it. We'll start up. This is our official build up to football season. So we'll be back to two shows a week. We'll do one of our normal shows or covering one subject, and then we'll do our weekly preview. We'll start actually in reverse with Texas Tech. Our friend Albie Shore will be on next week with us. We've already got him locked in, so we're excited for that. We'll see you then. And until next time, hook 'em.
Aggies still sucking.